And interestingly enough, with the control group screws, every single one of them showed evidence of crystalline type of deposits. And I came to the assumption, and it's purely an assumption because I wasn't able to qualify this in any real way, is that those crystalline deposits that I was observing were actually manufacturing residues. Now, you'd expect that those would be removed during the first reprocessing or the first cleaning cycle.
What if one conversation could save a life? What if one new process or new product could save a patient from surgical harm? Broadcasting from a hospital basement near you, you are listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the global voice of sterile processing. Each week we spotlight the best practices, products and people from around the world who are disrupting our profession and helping you fight dirty. Every instrument, every time. Join us as we have the kinds of conversation that matter and give our industry the kind of voice that it deserves. Nyt on aika mennä puhdastakin puhtaammaksi. And now it's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Terry McCauley, director at Steam Consulting. Terry is a passionate advocate for achievement of best practice in reprocessing reusable medical devices and is committed to sharing her knowledge with her colleagues and peers. For the past 20 years, she has represented the Australasian College for Infection Prevention and Control on the Australian Standards Committee responsible for the Australian and New Zealand standard known as AS/NZS 4187 that addresses reprocessing of reusable medical devices in healthcare facilities. Terry has participated in International Standards Organization working groups for moist heat sterilization, chemical indicators, and information for reprocessing re-sterilizable medical devices. During her career, Terry has worked as a registered nurse in the operating room, managed a sterile processing department, and developed and delivered and coordinated education programs leading to formal qualifications in infection prevention and control and sterile processing for healthcare workers. She founded her own consultancy business, Steam Consulting, in the early 1990s. Terry has a master's degree in science specific to medical device decontamination, and she has extensive expertise in reprocessing of reusable medical devices, flexible endoscopes, and infection prevention and control across a range of practice settings.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST, a closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Terry McCauley, director at Steam Consulting. And Terry, I know you had a chance to meet Hank and Bob at The Hague, or the World Congress, just a few months ago. And the topic for today's podcast is also tying in to one that we used to end season 5 with Bob himself talking about loaner trays and implant trays. And so now we're going to talk about these screw caddies today. Really looking forward to hearing your insights.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be able to actually meet you in cyberspace, and also having had met Bob over at The Hague was a wonderful experience, and I'm just so pleased to be invited to speak on this program.
All right. Well, as we take a closer look at reprocessing surgical implants, why don't you tell us a little bit about what drew you to this topic?
Oh, well, that's a little bit of a long story. Let me take you on a potted history of Australian reprocessing. So we have had an Australian standard for reprocessing. It's called AS4187, and that's been in place since 1994. And part of that standard required us to consider including manufacturers' batch allotments for implants in screw caddies, and we grappled with that for several years. Our Therapeutic Goods Administration, or the TGA, is our medical device regulatory agency. They also adopt ISO, or International Standards Organization standards. And in 1998, they decided that they would adopt the ISO standard 8828, which gives guidance on how you handle implants in orthopedic surgery. As a consequence, the orthopedic surgeons were up in arms and said that we can't possibly have individually packaged screws. It's increasing the risk for the patients, etc. So I decided that I would look at it from a bit of a different angle and see if reprocessing of these implants in screw caddies actually had a detrimental effect on them.
Terry, that's a great way really to look at it and think about it. I know the surgeons often push back, not understanding. And I remember from my days as a scrub tech, I did a lot of orthopedic trauma. And I could never I always wondered in my mind how the sterile processing staff would know which screws I handled and which I didn't. If I placed them back into the hole after measuring, sometimes I'd pull one out and it would be the wrong size. And so I'd have to go fishing for another screw until I found the right size. And I told him, if I put this back in the hole, it's going to, number one, it's going to be in the wrong size hole again here real quick. But also, how are they going to know which one I've touched and which one I haven't? And just a big mess. So it's really, really an important topic to look at. And I just wanted to ask you if you could help define the terms as we talk about these screws, if you could help us define single use, open but unused, and then single patient use.
Sure. So, you know, I have to say, Bob, I had a very similar experience. I used to be a scrub nurse once upon a time, and stock rotation in those screw caddies is always a problem. So you just never knew which one to take. But going back to your question, if we look at those terminologies, again, going back to the Therapeutic Goods Administration in Australia, they have definitions in the medical device regulations. And they say that single use is either single use, meaning to be used once only, or it can be single patient use, which means it can be used multiple times but only on one patient, and there may be some reprocessing in between those uses. And then we talk about open but unused devices. And so they're considered to be sterile devices that have been opened but have not had any patient contact. And as a consequence, if the manufacturer has supplied reprocessing instructions, we are allowed to re-sterilize that device. However, they're very clear in our medical device regulations saying that if that device has come into contact with patient tissue, but whether it be blood or another bodily fluid, then that's considered to be used and it cannot be reprocessed unless we are a regulated medical device reprocessor.
So, Terry, I want to ask something that you said a minute ago, that the surgeons had some pushback of some perceived risk to the patients from using, you know, a single packaged screw. So I'm very curious about that. What was the risk that they were so concerned about?
Well, It's sort of interesting. I don't know if you guys are all over the argument about the style of caps that surgeons wear when AORN or the American Operating Room Nurses Association published guidance saying that they had to wear the Buffon style. The surgeons were called to action basically to prove that there was that wasn't a suitable outcome. And it was a bit the same in Australia with this single use or single packaged implants. The surgeons went, we can't possibly do that. So started to produce papers saying that it increased the risk. And some of the premises were that it increased the tourniquet time because opening those packages would increase the operating time between 3 and 5 minutes. So there were a couple of papers published around that particular aspect of risk. And the other papers published were that looking at opening the packages and whether that introduced contamination onto the sterile field. And there were another couple of papers around that saying that it increased the risk of contamination of the field and therefore subsequently increased the risk of infection to the patient.
Excellent. So what were some of the risks then that you identified with using the screw caddies? And real quick, before we hop on that, I want to just mention that, you know, you and Bob both mentioned that the screws weren't potentially going back in the right, you know, placement for the caddy. I come from the sterile processing side of things. And so I have seen many a screw caddy hit the ground. And when that happens, it's a mad dash to try and get them all put back in the right place and sized. And it's a big mess. So the fact that, you know, any of them are ever in the right place is really just more shocking to me.
I agree. I think I always, when I was scrubbed, I always used to get confused about Constellus versus cortex or cortical screws. So can you imagine trying to sort through those screws while you're trying to put them back in the right category?
Especially when I would say probably about 65 to 70% of sterile processing technicians don't know what either one of those terms means.
Yes. And as a scrub nurse, I was lucky if I could remember half the time. And I've forgotten now because I've been out of the game for a while. I'm more reprocessing these days.
So, Terry, why don't you explain to us what are the risks and benefits to using the single-use screw caddy?
Well, in terms of the single-use screw caddy, I think the patient is getting an absolutely untouched product every single time. And it's traceable. So when you open the package, you've got the manufacturer's batch or lot numbers that are recorded in the patient record, and that contrasts significantly with screws in screw caddies where we can't possibly identify what particular batch or lot number that screw came from. The other issue, of course, when we're talking about screw caddies is the way that they're designed and the impact that has on our ability to effectively clean that implant each and every time. And the geometry as well means that those devices are likely to accumulate or start to deteriorate because of the contact of the metal with the screw caddy surface, and also because of the geometry of the screws themselves, they don't drain very well. So you can have accumulated debris and other residues.
So I'd like to take an even closer look at how you conducted your research, and then we start maybe leading into the findings. But you've talked a lot about what you've discovered through this process, but maybe go into more detail around how you actually conducted the research.
Okay, so what I did is I contacted some of my infection prevention colleagues at the Canberra Hospital in Australia and asked them if they would be interested in participating in a research project where I was going to look at screw caddies. And they do a lot of trauma at that particular hospital. And so they very kindly agreed to have me visit them, and they allowed me access to their data. So we could identify through their tracking system that on average they've got 5 screw caddies in circulation, and on average every year those screw caddies would be subjected up to 100 plus reprocessing cycles. So they seem to be a good candidate for me to look at screws that would be representative of frequently used screws, so not subject to so many reprocessing cycles, infrequently used screws, so potentially have been on those caddies for years, and then a group of screws that were somewhere in the middle in terms of usage. And so they had data on that from their ordering to the manufacturer of the implants, and so that's how we decided that we'd take the approach. We'd look at those 3 categories of screws and examine them under magnification.
That's fascinating, Terry. So can you discuss some of the findings that y'all had as you looked at the 3 different categories?
Sure. So I also obtained some brand new screws directly from the manufacturer. So they would be what I call my control group. And they were the baseline in terms of they hadn't been exposed to a reprocessing cycle. And these were the sort of screws that would be used to replace the ones that I'd taken out for the research project. And interestingly enough, with the control group screws, every single one of them showed evidence of crystalline type of deposits. And I came to the assumption, and it was purely an assumption because I wasn't able to qualify this in any real way, is that those crystalline deposits that I was observing were actually manufacturing residues. Now, you'd expect that those would be removed during the first reprocessing or the first cleaning cycle. But also on those control screws, I found only three of them had, out of the 10 that I observed, had some debris. A couple of screws had a couple of fiber-like adherence to them. But many of them actually had some scratches on the surfaces. And, of course, any scratch on the surface is going to accumulate the debris. So what I observed on those control screws was very different to what I observed on the other screws.
So you're saying that the control screws, the ones that the manufacturer sent to you essentially straight from the factory, you know, never been processed, were still showing, you know, debris on them, you know, dust, debris, scratches, those sorts of defects. That's pretty shocking to me. I mean, so did the manufacturers have any sort of response to that?
No, they just indicated that what I was observing is likely just to be manufacturing residue. Obviously, it hadn't been in contact with any human necessarily apart from during the manufacturing process. And the scratches could be attributed to transport. Obviously, they're transported in plastic packages and then packed into boxes in a certain number of screws per box, and that's probably where they've been rubbing against each other. So, but really, the types of debris or contaminants I was seeing on the control screws were completely different to what I observed on the reprocessed screws.
That's interesting. So for those of us who are not familiar with the various, you know, standards and regulations that are specific to Australia, can you tell us about, you know, the quality of water that you're typically using in your facility? Because that's one of the first things that would kind of pop into my mind, is that a number of facilities, in fact, I'd say the vast majority of facilities in the United States, are not using critical water, even though they yeah. really should be. And so I'm curious, you know, how pure is the water that you're using in your facility?
Well, I think we're probably very similar to what you're experiencing in the United States. Our current standard, our edition of 4187 is 2014, has first called into play water quality in terms of having a specification that must be met. In previous editions of our standard, it was a recommendation, but it wasn't an actually mandatory requirement. So most of our washer disinfectors are operating on potable water or tap water, and we have varying water quality throughout Australia in terms of hardness levels, the presence of silicates and other contaminants. And in those states or territories in our country where they've got hard water, they may have reverse osmosis water treatment systems or at least water softening systems on their water to try and improve the quality. But we're going through this massive transition at the moment of addressing final rinse water quality, which is probably a little stricter than what your critical water specification is.
So you had said, Terry, that the manufacturer explained that residue as, you know, or the scratches, et cetera, as possibly being from manufacturing residue. When you published your findings, what was the reaction from the industry? Did they find that to be an acceptable response?
See, I haven't actually published my findings. I've presented them at conferences. However, I haven't submitted it for publication in a journal, and that's on a list of my things to do.
Okay, so Terry, this part of the conversation is really interesting to me, and it goes back to my days working with a manufacturer. We often would get questions as well as to why do the instruments have debris on them, i.e. oil, an oily substance. And as they went through the manufacturing process, it would often leave that residue. And so the recommendation was to immediately unpackage them, run them through the washer. In the beginning, we used to say run them through three times and then place them into service. And so I'm wondering, do y'all have a similar standard like that there? I know when it comes to these implants here in the U.S., we would often take them directly out of the package and put them into the caddy, working in sterile processing. So do you have a process where you pre-clean them before you put them in, or do they go directly in Australia as well?
Well, Bob, I think it depends on the facility. So in our current edition of our standards, we made a point in there saying that anything that's returned from repair or is going to be introduced into circulation needs to go through the full reprocessing procedures. However, part of what I do now is audit facilities, and it seems to be quite a common thing that the sterile processing staff are asked to restock the caddies, and they are doing that in the clean area instead of in the dirty area or the decontamination area. When it goes through the whole reprocessing cycle. So I'm trying to make it very clear to any of my clients that they need to restock the screw caddies before they go through the cleaning process because of these manufacturing residues.
That's wonderful. And honestly, that's exactly what I see here typically, is that the caddies are being stocked on the clean side rather than on the dirty side and then going through the washer. So that's a fantastic point.
Excellent.
So I have a question about that then. So if we are seeing manufacturer residues on the screws that are coming in, you know, directly from the manufacturers prior to being cleaned, do those single packaged screws, you know, the ones that we might even be advocating thinking about moving to, is there a risk that even those might have these types of residues or damage or anything like that?
It's quite possible. Without being fully aware of how the sterile screws are produced by the manufacturers, it's very difficult for me to say, but that might be another area for research. But what I can tell you is that when I looked at what I was observing on what we called the high usage screws, these screws were the ones that are the most frequently used and therefore should be subject to fewer reprocessing cycles. I could tell you that 8 out of the 10 screws that I observed had the same crystal residues on them. However, apart from the crystal residues, 9 out of 10 of those screws had visible debris of varying natures, and some of them had fibres and some of them had fibre-like materials. However, I didn't see any scratches on those screws that had gone through the reprocessing cycle just a few times either. That was really interesting to find that.
That is really interesting. And so I think probably what most of the listeners are really going to want to know is, what is the risk to the patient when we're talking about residues, these crystalline structures, or even damage to the screws? You know, what is the potential outcome affected for those patients that are on the table?
Well, once again, it's very hard to draw a line between, you know, what I observed in my research in terms of clinical impact. And of course, that's a criticism of the study. But at the end of the day, we do know that we have problems with implants in terms of aseptic loosening. And a lot of the literature has said that aseptic loosening is probably related to endotoxin and or other biofilm that might be on that implant. So I think, you know, the more times we reprocess these items, the greater the risk of biofilm formation, the greater the risk of accumulated debris, et cetera. And therefore, I would propose that there's a greater risk to the patient.
So Terry, as you've conducted this research, I know you're going to continue. So what are some gaps you'd like to address as you continue to move forward with this project?
Oh, I haven't really thought about that. I'm just focused on getting this published amongst all the other things that I have to do. But I imagine that it would be really interesting from my perspective to have, and I did try to actually identify what the debris or the fiber-like materials were on the reprocessed screws that I was seeing. And I had the use of a infrared spectrometer. What we assumed from the findings from that, and I only had a limited opportunity, I could only sample 2 screws, is one of the fibres actually was of a material that's very similar in nature to a packaging material, so what we'd use as a sterile barrier system. And another particle or a bit of debris that I'd observed had a very similar profile to an alkaline cleaning agent. So we're seeing residues from our sterile barrier systems, and we're potentially seeing residues from our reprocessing agents, our cleaning agents, and rinse aids or neutralizers.
I think this R word, residues, is really an important topic for us to talk about because there are a lot of studies, at least here in the United States, I'm sure you probably have some in Australia as well, where they're showing different residues or different types of material, whether it be a piece of lint or something from a drape that caused a granuloma in a wound, mm-hmm. then resulting in an infection. And this is something I think that would be a really big concern. So I think we've definitely got to at least question the manufacturers and see how they can help us remedy that, because it could really be a big and continuing issue.
Absolutely. I think, these findings are not unique to screws in screw caddies, but I think the problem is about how we design trays, how we present our instruments to the washing process, the cleaning process. We're just seeing it sort of like encapsulated in the screw caddies because each individual screw can't be properly cleaned. When I looked at the results from my low usage screws, like 10 out of 10 of those screws had debris, 7 out of 10 had fibers, 10 out of 10 had black sludge-like material, these random black specks on 9 out of 10 of them. And so when I actually did my data analysis, I could show that the increasing risks of contamination and deterioration correlated with the number of exposures to reprocessing cycles. So I think that there's a bigger question here for the industry.
We had a great interview with Thor Rollins last season, and we were introduced to the concept of leaching. And while I know everybody is sort of familiar with residues, I think that it's almost like this is going to become a new buzzword as well. Some concepts that I think all of our listeners should really be paying attention to is this residues and leaching. I those are the two that have really stood out. I know we've talked in depth about a lot of topics over our 100 plus episodes, and many of them have been around, I'd say, what's coming up next in certain areas, but I don't know that we've ever really dove into concepts like leaching or residues to this level, especially because a lot of times there's just this faith in the manufacturer that is out there in the industry because they are the manufacturer. But at the same time, you know, we're all working together. Your research, so critical and so important, Terry. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap the interview?
Oh, I think one thing that I wasn't able to touch on in my research, and going back to your question about what's next, was the impact of multiple reprocessing cycles on these implants in terms of the stress to the metal and whether that increases the risk of breakage of the implant or shearing of the implant, which then would, of course, lead to leaching, particularly with stainless steel. You know, we can release nickel and chromium ions into the patient, cause problems there. And I can say that, you know, I saw a lot of corrosion on those more less likely to be reprocessed implants, you know, in terms of striations, which would impact on the surface of that and potentially lead to metal fatigue. So I think that's another untouched area, particularly with implants, where I think that's the biggest risk.
Well, we always say at the end of these interviews that there's plenty of more discussion to be had. We can definitely see you as a recurring guest on the podcast. I'm certain that you'll be hearing from us, and we can definitely dive into that topic as well. As far as the screw caddies go, where can our audience get more information to learn more about this conversation that we've had today?
All right. Well, I think on LinkedIn, a copy of my presentation that I'd given at an Australian conference was uploaded by a company. And just certainly what I'll probably do is just in the way of information is upload a presentation that I gave at CAMDA, so the Canadian Association of Medical Device Reprocessing, in 2016, which basically shows you all my findings and includes the pictures of the screws that I observed. So I think the audience might get some benefit from that.
Excellent. Well, I can't thank you enough for drawing attention to this, doing some research, and coming on the show to help others learn more about it. So great job today. Thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
That was Terry McCauley, director at Steam Consulting, talking about her research regarding residues and screw caddies. And Mike, I don't even think I realized how prevalent residues might be. I'm not even sure that concept even really came across my plate until we saw the work that Terry's doing.
Yeah, Justin, but as soon as you read her research, it just clicks because it's something you see and you say, well, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, it makes sense. And so the question then becomes, what risk is this to the patient? And so I think this is a critical area of research, especially when we're talking about implants, which are things that we are specifically intentionally leaving behind inside patients. So little things tend to add up when you're doing something like that. And one thing I wanted to point out, Justin, was think of the number of things that Terry mentioned that have been topics that are on our podcast that all came together to talk about this one issue. We've talked about loaners. We talked about leaching. We talked about visual inspection. We talked about partnering with infection control. I mean, there are so many things that all came together for this one thing, and it all comes down to what is the risk to the patient. And so I'm hoping the audience is starting to see all these divergent topics all starting to converge on this one primary subject, which is how can we better protect patients?
I can't wait to see it published and then the industry response. I'm very curious as to how that dialogue is going to go in the coming months and years. So that's going to do it for this week's show. But as a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike, Bob, and myself, thank you for listening to this week's edition of Beyond Clean.